So, but no, it's honestly we were very thankful for the weekend. But yep. So I do have a whole host here with me today. Some of them are here just in case. We wanted to spend most of the program today kind of talking about the flooding and the events that, I guess, over, has it been 2 weeks?
Yeah, about two weeks, 3 weeks.
About 2 weeks. So, yeah, we wanted to spend most of the program kind of talking about that and updating the listeners on where we are with the cleanup and some of the regulations that go along with that. But I'm hoping that our emergency management director, Kerry Cox, can make it. Kerry is actually at a county commissioner's meeting right now, so he may or may not be here. If he's not, I've got a couple of guys standing by on deck just in case. And so that's the ones that are currently in the background, Garrett. They're flipping switches on all of your boxes. So
yeah, we may be off the air by now. I can't really tell at this point.
I don't have any idea what they're doing.
Somebody will wave at us through that window over there if anything happened. But
see, you guys start messing with this stuff, Kevin's going to come up here, and nobody wants that. Anyway, so... But before we got started, did have a couple of announcements. Actually, I was going to make, but now I've got Micah Seamers here. I think I'll let him talk about it. And by the way, he has absolutely no warning, and he just gave me a little
this
bit of a panicked look.
I'm excited.
So actually, this morning, you and one of your inspectors, Dan Bazler, were going out and looking at the Price Road, the dowel joint retrofit,
right.
I believe is the technical term for it. And you had an update for when completion is expected on that.
We do, yeah. So Dan and I drove through it today. They have finished the diamond grind portion of the work. We did anticipate that would be done the first part of this week. They actually went a little bit quicker than expected and got it pretty well wrapped up over the weekend. So they are finished with that phase of it. That's what Dan and I were actually checking on this morning, just to kind of check the ride. And again, it's not perfect. I don't think it ever would have been perfect,
yeah.
But it's a lot better than it was before the project started, for sure, which was the goal. So they have finished that. They still have to do some striping. They have to do some sealing, some caulking of the joints,
sealing
the concrete,
joints, yeah.
Sealing the joints, and then a little bit of work on the shoulders still as well for cleanup. So there are a few things to wrap up, and so we're thinking probably in the next 2 weeks they should complete construction. That being said, hopefully by the end of this week, and don't want anybody to hold us to this, but it is anticipated that by the end of this week, we should have both directions open at the same time. So
what you heard him say is write that down. He guarantees that by the end of the
exactly.
week, both lanes will be open,
exactly.
right, Micah?
Yep, it will be. Come hell or high water, it's going to be open.
We can't even think of how many times I had to write about switchbacks on the road
just
to let people
yep.
know what was
just,
going on.
Just
yeah.
about the time you got used to being closed one way, you had to turn it around.
Yeah,
but,
it was a...
No,
yeah.
it's a, so Tough so problem. Barring any other delays, which are certainly possible at this point,
could happen.
Time, should
sure.
be open. Should have both lanes open by the end of the week, but
right.
there'll be cleanup and sealing going on for probably a couple of weeks.
Right, for so. A couple of weeks. We got a couple of weeks of work still left on that project.
But it is getting close, and that is a heavily traveled road, and I know it shifted traffic into other areas. So we're glad.
It has.
We'll be glad
it
to
has.
have it open back up.
And we threw the old change up in there also with closing down part of Stonewall, so I'm sure people were thrilled about that. So hopefully we can get both directions here on Price going. And
we always quote Jim Bonsack at these times. Jim Bonsack was famous for the quote that the shortest distance between two points is under construction.
It's under construction. That's correct. That's true. We're trying to hold to that.
That's it. We're,
to that.
We're doing our best. Yeah. So, but, you know, construction is inconvenient, but it is great
it is.
That we
it's
have
a,
those kind of improvements going on around
that's
our community.
Right. It means
so,
progress.
Yep,
it means
that's
progress.
Right. So, but one of the other things that Micah has been dealing with, his department handles our floodplain administration, and he's going to talk about that here in a minute. But before he gets started, I wanted to talk about the actual cleanup. So, the city was involved in several phases of it. We were involved during the flood, of course, when we were trying to, you know, barricade roads. And I've got the fire chief here with me. He'll talk in a minute about the some of the rescues that we went through, but. It was a wild 24 hours as the floods were coming in, and then over the next week as they receded and came back up. And then ultimately, once the waters were gone, the city assisted several of our neighborhoods that were the hardest hit with the cleanup. We allowed them to take their debris and take it out to the curb, and we picked all that up with a machine for free. Just wanted to let everybody know that we are wrapping that program up. So it will actually, we're going to leave some containers in place. I believe we have three areas right now. We've got one in Kenilworth. I think we've got one down on the south edge of town. And then I believe there's one up on the north edge of town as well. And so we'll have those in place for about another week. Our intent is that we'll pick those up on Monday. That'll give everybody another a weekend to finish their completely finish their cleanups, and then we'll get those out of there. We've also assisted the residents with the with their appliances. That in particular, refrigerators and freezers can be troublesome because of the Freon. So we were able to take that and actually reclaim the Freon and get those disposed of for those people. So, I know it was a big help, and I really appreciate the guys that participated in that. There were a lot of guys in the Public Works Department, and I don't know, Terry, I don't think we had any of your water or wastewater guys. You all were busy on the drainage project downtown, but had a lot of guys from Public Works that were out there, and I know the citizens really appreciate it, and we do as well for their assistance. But just want to make sure everybody was aware that we've got about another week left on that program that we'll have those containers out there, and then we'll be wrapping that up. And with that, I'm going to turn this back over to Micah because he was the man kind of in the middle of the flood for the city. He is our, I believe you are technically our floodplain administrator.
I am. That's not sure you want that role, but
it's
sure.
A job that sure. Really doesn't mean much until it means a lot. It's what exactly. It really is. You don't need it till you really need it.
Right.
So.
Right.
But during this process, you were, I know you and I were in communication on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And then kind of as it wrapped up, one of the more important roles for the city of Bartlesville, because we participate in the FEMA, is it floodplain administration?
Well, it's the National Flood Insurance Program.
There you go.
NFIP.
NFIP.
So.
Yeah, one of the most important things that we have to do, and this isn't voluntary, if we're going to allow our citizens to buy FEMA flood insurance, we have to do what's referred to as a substantial damage inspection after a flood of any property that's
correct.
In the flood.
That's correct.
So most people probably aren't aware of it. If you mind spending a few minutes talking about what that is.
Right. So, yeah, like you said, we are, as part of that program, we are required to do this. We're required to actually put that in our laws, if you will, in our floodplain ordinances. So basically what this means is that if there's, and it doesn't even have to be flooding, it could be that a tornado comes through, but if your property is located within the 100-year floodplain, or that what they call the special flood hazard area,
right?
So your SFHA is what they call it, you're going to probably be seeing these things out there.
And it should have been disclosed at the time that you bought the house.
Should have. Should have. Doesn't mean it always is, but should have. Yep. So if you're in those areas and you have damage to your structure, that's going to require improvements. Essentially, what we have to do is go out and do a substantial damage estimate, if you will, an inspection of the property. And this really all relates just to the structure itself, not the actual land. It's just the structure itself. And so we have to look at that, and if the damages are greater than 50% of the estimated value of the structure. So what we base this off of is the county assessor's information. But actually, the homeowner can actually go out and have a professional assessment done of their structure. So if we compare those two numbers and the estimated damages, if you will, and if it's greater than 50%, it's considered substantially damaged. At that point, that structure is required to come into full compliance with floodplain regulations. So it'd be like treating it as though it's a new construction in the floodplain, which means you have to meet certain other criteria. It's got to be actually above the base flood elevation. We require 1 foot above the base flood elevation for the finished floor of the structure. So that would mean if it's not there, it would have to be raised or demolished or relocated. So those are kind of your options.
Yeah.
And again, it's not a good thing if that does happen.
But, no, if you're a homeowner, but we have had some homeowners. In fact, I've had one in particular that inquired through somebody else. They were not deemed to be substantially damaged, and they wanted to know if they could appeal it in the other way. They wanted to know if they could contact FEMA and say, I don't want to move back into my house.
Right.
I want to go ahead and remove the structure because they were in a floodway. So
sure.
So for somebody who is substantially damaged, essentially what it means is that the cost to repair the house is more than half of what the house is worth.
Correct.
And so for those people, what does that mean, Micah?
Other so, than you,
so
you again,
mentioned
there's,
what the requirements
there's
were,
three but. Options there. But really what they need to do is if they've got flood insurance, they need to go through FEMA at that point to see what kind of assistance they're going to get or what kind of buyout they're going to get, whatever their policy covers and what kind of coverage they're going to get for that structure. So that's really their first step. And really, most of this goes through FEMA at this point. I mean, we're responsible for doing that, doing the assessment.
We make the determination
correct.
On behalf of FEMA. We forward it to the homeowner and to FEMA.
Right.
And then that really becomes an insurance issue
right.
from that point forward.
Because really our job is to regulate the construction in the floodway or in the flood zone. So So what basically what that does is it flags for us anybody from that structure that comes in and wants to make improvements. We have to essentially say, look, you've got to come into compliance.
Yep.
And so really we kind of get stuck being the bad guy and that we limit what they can do.
By law, we become the enforcers for FEMA.
Hold building permits and all that stuff. We can't give any building permits or anything like that until they're coming into compliance or show that they're going to come into compliance. So we get kind of stuck holding that bag, if you will. But really then at that point, the relationship at that point though is the homeowner and FEMA. So that's really their next step.
And you mentioned it briefly, but if a homeowner received one of those notifications that their home was substantially damaged,
mm-hmm.
then they appeal that through us. And so they
can
would
appeal
call
it.
The engineering department if they wanted to appeal that.
That's
and
correct.
What number should they call, Mike?
Call 918-338-4251, and that'll get the admin assistant
and
there.
That's for any questions. If you received a letter and it dealt with the substantial damage, then call that number. If you have any questions, if it's a FEMA question, we'll direct you back to FEMA.
Right.
But if it is a question about how to appeal, essentially they really have two options. One option is to get their house appraised.
A professional appraisal.
Get a professional appraisal. And if it's greater than what the county land records say, then it could bring that calculation down.
Because there's some of those that are right on that borderline. They may be at 50.8% or 50.1%. We had a couple of them. So I think that could probably help those structures.
And then I think you said there was another method they could do.
They could actually. So what we use essentially is an estimating program that FEMA has put together. It's a substantial damage estimator. It's a computer program that essentially we go through. They give us guidelines on estimating percent damage of various different things like the foundation, the roof, the superstructure, the interior, the cabinets, things of that nature. So we go through and we use their guidelines and we then assess the amount of damage. So this is all essentially based off of new construction costs. So we give $100 a square foot new construction cost, which is honestly probably a little bit on the low side.
Yeah, it is now.
But we use that and then we use the square footage on the county records. And that's going to be your new construction cost for that structure. And then these percentages of damage essentially are applied to that, if you will. And so that's what comes up with the total estimated damages. So what they can do also, if that number seems too high, they actually can, or too low, theoretically, if you're, I guess, on the flip side and you're at 48.9%, you don't want to move back into that structure.
And you want your home to be substantially damaged.
You can't appeal, I suppose. But so basically what they can do then also is get an actual professional estimate of the damages. So you can have a contractor come in and actually break that down and give you an actual estimate of what it's going to cost to bring that structure, you know, to repair that structure. So we can look at that as well. So there's two options they really have for appeal, or both.
But for anybody who has questions, please call engineering. I've gotten questions through other avenues where they're talking to a state representative or something of that nature. That's
right.
Fine. You always have a right to call those people. But if you really want to know exactly what that letter means or what your options are, then they should call the engineer.
Need to contact us. And it's been has been surprising. We haven't received a lot of phone calls from any of the structures. And again, we're trying to get that information out there, but we haven't received a whole lot of calls on that. So.
And one last thing on that, Micah. We had 9 structures that were deemed to be substantially damaged.
That's correct.
We had some letters that were sent out mistakenly, and I think, was there 16 letters that were sent
there
was, out
There
mistakenly.
Were 19 letters that were sent out mistakenly. So we had 28 total that there was some form of damage, if you will, that there was an estimate that came back with some damage. So of those 28 structures, 9 of them were substantially damaged. The other 19, we did send the actual substantial damage letter mistakenly, and so we sent a follow-up letter clarifying that their structure actually, in fact, was not substantially damaged, so it was underneath that 50% threshold. And so we tried to clear that up. So again, apologize for that mistake. I know that's in a time where there's lots of confusion anyway. We just made it more difficult. So
we made it more confusing.
Yeah,
but,
not,
but again, it, we would encourage anybody who received a letter that they have questions about, please call engineering, call that number one more time. What's your number?
918-338-4251.
So we would encourage everybody to call that. So I do see that Kerry Cox has joined us, so we will have a full-on flood program. Go ahead and stay, Chief. The Chief was trying to give up his seat. There was a race to give up seats over here. But before we get to Kerry, I'd also asked Chief Banks to be here. He's our fire chief, and wanted to talk to him a little bit because I know that on the night of, I believe, was it Monday night into Tuesday morning of that week?
Yeah.
Is that when the flooding actually hit, if I remember right?
I think one of our first calls was Monday evening about 7 o'clock for a lady that had drove off into
Hogshooter
Creek, I
That's
think it
right.
was. It was a mutual aid call to Oglesby.
she was on one of the back roads through there and had driven off into Hog Shooter in the dark, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was there were a lot of rescues. I was actually present for one of them, and it was somebody who was, and I think Carrie was there as well. It was somebody that they had pulled out of down around Sand and Eliza Creeks, who was on a jet ski. Yeah. And so, Chief, would you advise people during floodwaters to use a jet ski to get around?
No, it seems like the jet propulsion.
He was not this kind when I talked to him later that day.
Yeah, the jet propulsion on those aren't really designed to suck debris and stuff through
and
that.
Mud and floodwaters.
I think that's, I wasn't on that scene, but from what I understand, I think that's kind of what happened. They got it plugged up, and so we had to go fetch them.
And unfortunately, that anytime somebody gets out like that. Now, this was not somebody that was trying to escape the flood on a watercraft. This was somebody that was trying to return to a flooded structure on a watercraft. And unfortunately, what happens in those situations is that you put the lives of firefighters and first responders at risk. And so we would ask anybody that if you ever escape a flooded property, please don't try to return.
Absolutely.
Please don't. If there's life at risk there, then we understand. You call us and we'll get in there and we'll rescue whoever it is. But we'd ask you not to return to your property once you're out.
Yeah, we prefer that once we get you out, please don't return.
But your guys ran, they ran for about 18 hours until the floodwaters receded. I know there were a number of rescues that happened that night.
Yeah, it pretty much continued somewhat nonstop until about 5 o'clock, I guess it would have been Tuesday evening. I think we roughly was involved in about 25 different rescues, multiple. Some of them were one person, some of them were whole families,
livestock.
We didn't do a lot. Some of ours, Washington County did a lot of the livestock rescue. We did a little bit, but we were so busy with getting people out.
Yeah.
And we got limited resources when it comes to that type of equipment. Yes, so sometimes, and the rescue always takes longer than what you think it's going to.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Just because you get there and you think, well, okay, we got the wrong boat. We need something different, you know. So it takes a while sometimes to get the proper equipment on scene because you don't know what you're getting into, because a lot of these times the people that call you, you know, they don't know all the obstacles you have to get from point A to point B, you know, to where they're at. So, you know, so they are time consuming, and sometimes, you know, we got overwhelmed pretty quickly and leaned heavily on Washington County and some of the other neighboring Osage Hills and Oglesby and stuff, neighboring communities to help us.
And Chief, we also had kind of a special volunteer during that period.
Absolutely, yeah. We had a gentleman from up at Dewey that had an airboat that offered to.
Is it all right if we mention his name?
Melvin Offit, and he came up and we put a crew with him, and there was several rescues that would have been much more difficult had it not been for him. His airboat.
And people don't know what an airboat is. It's the one that looks like a tub with a huge fan on the back of it.
Yeah, and you can hear him coming for a long ways off.
And it'll drive across muddy fields. It'll go across water. So it'll
go down asphalt roads.
That's right. Yeah. His help was much appreciated. We were, because our boat does not have the same capabilities that his does.
Absolutely not. And we did end up with an airboat that come in from
the state.
But it was almost like they got here just in time. It was all over with.
They got here just in time to watch the floods recede.
I don't think they ever made a call.
I think you're right.
But that's what happens, you know, when these events occur. So many calls coming in at one time.
Sabotaging the operation.
My God. It's like a bull in a china shop behind me. I don't know what they're doing. I think you just knocked your computer over.
Yeah, just a little bit.
we get overwhelmed quickly, you know, on these type of instances. And so many times by the time you get all the help here that you need, well, you're done.
Yeah, that's it. By the time you get all the resources on scene, it's gone. But we appreciate everything that you guys did and that you did. I know you were personally assisting on some of those. I saw David Topping out personally assisting. Yep. You had crews all over the place, and I'd love to thank all of them, but frankly, I only saw a couple of guys, and I know there was a lot more than that out there. But I specifically wanted to mention Melvin because that's just a private citizen who had a piece of equipment that was invaluable to us, and he jumped right in, and he ran probably 12 plus hours that he
I think his count on rescues that him and the fire department did combined together was around 40, you know.
Wow.
But it was
quite a night.
It really was. It was a busy day, and you know, there was, you know, we're not normally used to putting calls off, you know, and taking a long time. I mean, when our bell goes off, we're out the door going, and you know, we were running, you know, 45 minutes, an hour behind.
Because
we just, and the people weren't really in harm's way. They just needed out.
They
were
cut
off.
Yeah.
And so anyway, so, but yeah, we had a, we put on a, I don't know, we probably put on 20 extra guys that day, on our department to help with that. So yeah, it was a busy 24 hours, I guess.
And I know your guys also, it seems like they handled some of the advance notification for the homeowners when the floodwaters were coming up. You guys were in some of the neighborhoods advising people to leave as well.
Yeah, we did get out. We always do in these types of scenarios, you know, we tell people, hey, the water's coming. You know,
we know it's going to flood.
Yeah, and so some of them leave, some of them choose not to, and then we go back later and get them.
We get to make a return trip, is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Well, as I said, really appreciate everything you guys do. That was one of the questions that people had that didn't really know was, you know, are we going to be notified? And, of course, they were notified because they were notified by the fire department in the vast majority of cases. So thank you. Thank you, guys.
You bet.
Thank Melvin for all that, the work that was done that night to keep everybody safe. We did not have a single loss of human life during this event, if I'm not mistaken.
Not that I'm aware of. You aware of any, Kerry?
Fantastic. Yeah. Very easily could have went the other way. So
we had some that
guys.
Were in harm's way.
Yeah,
they were. That we were very fortunate that we got them out in time.
Well, and Kerry Cox, our Washington County Emergency Management Director, showed up. I know you had a county commissioners meeting, so I appreciate you joining us here. But
sure.
You just got an update on Friday, I believe, from FEMA.
Yes. We spent the entire day Friday with the what they call the IDA team. It's an assessment team that comes out that's joint between FEMA, Small Business Administration, State of Oklahoma. Some other folks are represented there. And they just come out and verify the damage assessments that we've already done to see if we can meet any of the thresholds for any of those different agencies and the assistance that they might be able to provide. And about 7 o'clock Friday evening, we finally finished that up, and then we got word back Saturday that we were included in that declaration for individual assistance.
That's great news. And so the individual assistance is for individuals.
Yes, individuals that have suffered damage to their residential structures. Businesses are also included in that. Now, we don't know the details of exactly all the different types of assistance that might be available. We hope to get that information, should get that information sometime this week. There will be a disaster assistance center set up at some point. And then all these folks will have to come in and register with FEMA, either through an 800 number or on a website, or go to that disaster assistance center. And once we get them signed up, then we can see what type of assistance each individual will qualify for. Could be anything from low interest loans all the way up to direct assistance from some agency or another.
Okay. Well, that is definitely good news. That's one of the questions that we've had. Early on, there was a declaration, I believe it was Washington County, declared itself a disaster. The state had declared us a disaster, but the final one was waiting on FEMA. So that kind of closed the loop there. So this is officially a disaster at all levels.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. And so now you guys, as the chief said, you all assisted on some rescues and things of that nature. And I was here in 1986, but I'm a little younger than the chief. So I don't remember it quite as clearly as you do. I won't get into details. But the area around Sand and Eliza Creek, Kerry, that was we're being told that was about as bad as that had ever been.
Yeah, and a lot of the folks, you know, down in the Kenilworth edition,
right.
You know, said, well, you know, we didn't get this much water in 86. This was not an 86 level flood.
No, not my experience.
However, the contributing factor to this was Sand Creek. We didn't have gauges on Sand Creek back in 86. Don't think that gauge even existed in 2007. If it was there, it was very, very new. It's still not tied into the system of all the other gauges,
right.
Because we don't have the historic data from it. But we do know from looking at that gauge during this event and also talking to folks that live along Sand Creek out in Osage County and have lived there their entire life, this was a historic event on Sand Creek.
Sand Creek.
We saw that Sand Creek gauge go from about, it usually runs somewhere between 3 and 6 feet on the gauge. It went to over 40 feet.
Wow.
So there was a lot of water come down that tributary into the Caney River, and it joins down there real close to Kenilworth.
Right around Kenilworth, that's right.
And so all of that issue out on Highway 123 and along Circle Mountain and Kenilworth, that was the contributing factor to that with Sand Creek.
It all empties right into that area. And I think the point of this, and Micah's still here, Micah, when the Corps of Engineers, or Kerry, whichever one of you guys, when the Corps of Engineers tells us that the river is going to be at flood stage, which, you know, if it's 18 feet or what have you, then what they mean is that that is how high the river will be at a single point.
Correct.
That's not a description of the flood as a whole or what people should expect. That's just one point in the river. And where exactly, when the Corps gives us that, where is that gauge when they say the height of it?
Is it that gauge is in Johnstone Park, and it's actually mounted there on the city's intake system.
So I can actually see visibly on the side of it the height of the river. I wasn't sure if that was the one.
And the only gauges that we have on the Caney River are, of course, the water releases at both Hula and Copan Lake, then the gauge at Johnstone Park. The next gauge is down south of Ramona.
Okay.
So, when we send those readings out of what we're seeing at those gauges, it is at those specific points.
So the important point for everybody to remember is that, yes, they say what the height of the river will be, but that means it is that height in Johnstone Park. That doesn't mean that it will reflect that way throughout the city, because we do have other tributaries. There's Turkey Creek, and there's Eliza Creek, there's Sand Creek. All of those flow into the Caney, and they affect different areas of the community. So we want everybody to understand, because Kenilworth, this river, this time the river did not get as high as it did in 07, but in 07, Kenilworth did not flood.
Well, so there were some structures that flooded in Kenilworth in 2007, Not nearly as many.
So I think that's an important thing for everyone to realize, that that's what that means. We tend to think that the river was 18 feet then, it's 16 feet now, it won't get me. Well, that's not always the case. We also have the issues of localized flooding, Micah. We have those flash floods that come when we're just inundated. And we've had those occur in areas away from the river that were in neighborhoods that haven't flooded in the past just because of the heavy rainfall in a localized area.
We actually went through the substantial damage process back in 2010, I believe it was, in the there along the east side of town, just, I guess, west of Madison Boulevard.
Yep.
Long Brookline, stuff like that. So, and again, the river wasn't anywhere near the flood stage during that one, but again, localized flooding on Turkey Creek.
I think that's pretty important. But I will say I was impressed by the response. I was impressed by everything that went on. And I don't have our police chief here, Chief Rolls, but the police were involved in it. Keith Henry's guys were involved in it, the street department. So there was a lot of coordination, and all of this happened without any input from anybody like me. You guys know your jobs, you do your jobs, and I truly do appreciate that. Now, one last thing, and for whoever's best suited to answer this, if somebody has a question, a homeowner or a business owner has a question for FEMA, what's the best thing they can do right now? Is there a number they need to reach out to at Phoenix or Phoenix at FEMA?
Call Phoenix.
Yeah, call Phoenix Insurance. I'm sure they'd appreciate
it. The ID's coming up, Mike.
Wow, I went 1 minute too long. I was really good right up to there. Should they wait until they establish that disaster center?
You know, and it's as difficult as it is right now, patience is going to be the best thing. And I know that's hard to ask from some of these victims. But we know that this Disaster Assistance Center is going to be established soon. Hopefully, later this week, we will have the dedicated number and website for FEMA that folks can call. So as soon as we get that information, we'll get that out. We'll distribute it through every media outlet, every venue that we can possibly access so that folks have that information.
All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate your time today and giving everybody an update on this. And thank you, Garrett.
No problem. Thank you, guys. And that was City Matters on K1.
Are you getting married? Get the gift of life insurance. Call Phoenix Insurance, 918-336-5460. This is KWON Bartlesville, K227CQ Bartlesville.
He came up from behind and shot